evening, everyone, and welcome to Shattered Lives. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, and we at Shattered Lives are so excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator and getting to the heart of what crime victim families experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to the show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or organization featured the week before our show is aired. And please don't forget, in case you can't listen from 5 to 6 Eastern Time, you can always listen at any time using our archival features, and that is denoted by our graphic with the big red heart and cracks on the Blog Talk Radio Inside Lens Network in about 24 hours or so after the show. So with that, I say good evening again and welcome, everyone. It's so good to be back in the pilot's chair after a very productive and enjoyable hiatus in South Carolina. And it's wonderful to have my co-pilot and very talented PR manager, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity. Delilah, welcome to the radio. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me here each week for you. It's always fun, and we always have some very interesting guests. You've done some good work at getting some very quality topics, and tonight's topic is, again, another quality topic that needs to be discussed and needs to bring an understanding to our listeners.
Yeah, I feel the same, and I'm so glad you feel that way, because we don't always get to this topic, and I think it is very important. Excuse me, but before I do bring in our esteemed guests in just a minute or so, just want to make a couple of announcements. Let's see, with respect to myself and things that I may be doing, self-promotion or with Imagine Publicity, want to say that I'm always working on new bookings for the radio show. If people have new ideas that they would like to send in, please do get in touch with me. I am booking currently for shows in March and always working on new blogs. And if the if all goes well, one of my goals for the new year is to be working on my ebook as well, because that has kind of sat on the shelf for too long. And want to also say that a new feature that I may be starting, and we're going to be collaborating with Monica Kayson of the Q Center for the Missing, is perhaps doing a special blog every month featuring a family member about someone who goes missing from the perspective of humanizing that person irrespective of the crime, whether it be an interview or a story. And just to mention very briefly, they have their annual conference coming up from March 21st to the 24th, and it's going to be at the hotel, the Courtyard Marriott in Carolina Beach, North Carolina, directly on the beach, a new hotel this year. So please do get in touch with Monica for that and register. And we're all very excited about that, to be in a new place, and it's going to be a great conference. So without further ado, let me talk a little bit about my guests. I've had the great pleasure to know these dear friends for many, many years. John and Becky Gleason are from Glastonbury, Connecticut, and they have been co-facilitators of PFLAG Hartford, and PFLAG stands for Parents and Friends of Lesbian and Gays, but of course it includes other categories as well, including bisexual, transgender, intersex, and questioning. John and Becky have taken up the call, and they're super advocates, and they've been around since the late 80s, since I've known them, and as a gay woman, I have to say that they are very instrumental in helping me through a very difficult time many years ago, and they remain my dear friends, and I'm so glad to have them. So welcome, John and Becky, this evening. Welcome to Shattered Lives.
Thank you, Donna.
Thanks, Donna. Good to be here.
Yeah, well, we're very happy to have you. And, you know, although this show sometimes focuses on aspects of crime. You know, being gay does also have this elements of crime, whether it has to do with gay bashing. Sometimes there's homicide involved. There's definitely violence. There's definitely discrimination that has happened far too often. But that's not going to be our focus tonight. What I'd like to talk about is, because you've had such longevity with the group, and you're such stellar advocates for our area in terms of anyone who is coming out or who is active in the community, perhaps we can start by you telling us how you got started with the organization, and then there's some very interesting facts that you related to me a couple a week or so ago about who is coming to meetings now, and just the influx of more people, and I'm very, very glad to hear about that. So if you'd like to tell us a little bit about your background and your daughter, I think that'd be great.
Well, our adventure started in 1989 when our oldest of three children, our daughter, then 28, came out to us as a lesbian.
Mm-hmm.
We were pretty ignorant. We bought into a few negative stereotypes. We didn't have a lot of gay friends and really felt isolated with this new knowledge. Now, the one thing we did right is we told her we loved her right away, and mm-hmm. there was no worrying about that part. But as she came out of the closet, we went in, and until a friend a few weeks later said, you need to get yourself to PFLAG, and I didn't even know what the letters stood for, parents, families, and friends of lesbians and gays. But after our first meetings there, we began to realize that we weren't isolated and that there was a lot of good information available. And we were just awfully lucky to have found it that early in our journey.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it true that each of you sort of embraced it in a different way in your own timetable? And the fact that perhaps, you know, I think people have the idea that it's only the individual, whether it be a daughter or a son or a cousin, whoever is acknowledging their true orientation, that it's a whole process of the family and friends coming out as well. Isn't that correct?
Sure. We often say at our PFLAG meetings that there's a coming out process with respect to parents and family members, very similar to that of the gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender child. That was true in our case. It took a little longer for me to come to grips with the fact that we had a lesbian daughter than it did Becky. She
mm-hmm.
went to PFLAG right away, and I dragged my feet for a few months, but then rallied, and I think I carried the PFLAG banner in the Gay Pride Parade in Hartford before I even attended my first PFLAG meeting. But
isn't that the cart before the horse, John?
A little bit. There's some difficulty in coming out to your family members as a parent of a gay child, not knowing how they're going to accept the news, even after you have accepted it and developed an understanding and an acceptance. You're not sure where your colleagues at work stand. You're not sure where your faith community stands in many cases, and that was true in our instance. And
mm-hmm. Well, John, do you and Becky think, and Donna, do you think there is coming to a time, or will our society ever come to a time when parents don't have to mentally go through this process, that whatever their child's sexuality is what it is, and they don't have to accept or deny it. It just is what it is.
We live in that hope. We live in that hope, and I think it is getting a lot better. and people whose children come out to them in this day and age, we find are having a lot easier time of it than we did. There's much more information out there. There mm-hmm. is much more media involvement with gay and lesbian issues, gay characters on TV and in the movie. Mm-hmm. And
social media is part of the equation
media,
as well.
Social media is huge, of course, and
mm-hmm.
All of that is very helpful. All of the surveys taken on the acceptance of homosexuality as an issue, it's not really an issue, but that's the way it's served up in many of the surveys. Find that there is a increasing tolerance and understanding, and to the point where more than 50% now in most of the recent surveys of the population have feel that homosexual relationships are proper.
You know, there's one statistic, though, that still bothers us as parents. And that
What's
is
that,
that one in four parents still reject their gay child. Well, it's changed. I should say one in four back in 1989 when we learned of the news.
Yeah.
Now it's one in five, which is a little better. But goodness,
yeah.
You'd think that it would be a lot better statistics than that. I just want to just put in a plug for PFLAG because it is a national organization and
mm-hmm.
Gives us a voice in Washington. But it started in 1972 with just a mom, just like us, just a mom who decided that she wanted to march with her son Marty in the Gay Pride Parade, her gay son. And she had a little homemade banner that said, "Parents of gays unite in support of our children." And after that Gay Pride March, they were swamped with people who wanted to know more about this. So nationally, PFLAG started as an organization in 1973. And PFLAG.
And how many members across the country now, Becky?
Well, it's
now?
Right now 500 chapters in all 50 states. And over 200,000 members. Now, some of those members might not be actively going to meetings, but they have good information at their fingertips, and they know that they're not alone, and the connection with hearing other people's stories from month to month, I think, is the most important thing in growing and understanding your gay or lesbian or bisexual transgender child. Hearing other people's stories is just amazing. And I guess that we were lucky enough to have a pediatrician friend who said to us, "I want you to just remember these three things." This was about the day after our daughter came out. She said, "Just want you to know this. Sharon is normal." Well, that was a great word for me to know that,
yeah.
You know, same gender attraction occurs in all higher animal life, that Sharon is healthy, that the, you know, APA has removed from the list of mental illnesses.
Yeah.
And so that was important, healthy and normal. And she said, and she is the same child that you knew. You just know another part of her. And she's going to have a fulfilled life, which indeed she has, with her partner of 22 years. And they have children, and they're a great family. So ours is a good story.
Not every parent of a gay child is as privileged as we were to have a friend like that who gave us such good information, and that's where PFLAG comes in. The PFLAG mission is a three-pronged mission based on support, education, and advocacy, and all three are needed. Our monthly meetings of our chapter focus more on the support element. but advocacy for fairness in our laws, both on the state and federal level, is huge, and we've been very active in pursuing that, and also education, of course, and we have a very large lending library with that's kept up to date with timely books and articles and videos and all sorts of information that is really helpful to people who are uninitiated, as we were when we first got our news.
Right. That is true.
Is there anything education awareness-wise within schools, or is that a wise thing to do? At what point should people, I don't want to say kids or adults or whatever, but people, what time should they start being educated? I guess, you know, there's sex education in junior high. Should this issue be also discussed during that time?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, starting in kindergarten.
The sooner the better.
Preschool.
You don't have to teach the nitty-gritty, but you do have to teach diversity in all its forms. And
right.
There are people in this world who love people of the same gender. And that's a pretty easy concept to understand. It's about feelings, and young kids can understand how people have a particular attraction for another person, and if they can be made aware of the fact that on occasion a small percentage of the population has that attraction for people of their same gender, then that's a huge step forward in the education process.
We're asked to speak at diversity days, and of course high schools now have gay straight alliances. Things are getting better within the education community. There's wonderful organization that we participate in called Stonewall Speakers, and they go into high schools, but not all schools are equal as far as their agenda about these.
Becky,
items.
How about the library associations? Are they? Do you think they're becoming more open in terms of accepting books, and whether it be picture books for kids, small kids?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely. Well, that's good to hear, too. You know, what I was wondering was that, you know, when we talked about the, you know, percentages in terms of, you know, 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 parents still rejecting, when we had Robin McCallan on, you know, several months ago, and that was a wonderful show, she spent a lot of time in terms of talking about the types of rejection. I mean, maybe people just think, well, you know, okay, I'm not going to talk to that person for a month because I'm so hurt, and maybe they'll change their mind. What constitutes rejection? We're talking about kicking people out of the home. We're talking about, you know, very drastic things, aren't we?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, at the extreme, yes. I remember a young man who came to a PFLAG meeting and said, I just want to check you all out because I'm going to come out to my parents in a few weeks, and I want to be able to tell them that you all meet here. And but he said, but when I tell them, I'm going to have my bag packed by the door because there is a chance that I might not be welcome in my own home. Well, the story turned out to be wonderful. The parents were great. He brought them to PFLAG. But that's not the story that we often hear.
It varies all over the spectrum. Many times one parent will be much more accepting than the other, and one will be a loyal PFLAG member, never misses a meeting, and the other will never come.
Right.
So it varies within the same family on occasion.
Mm-hmm. And if you try to spend your time and effort in getting both of those parents to come together, sometimes it's an exercise in futility. You might as well concentrate on the person that is focused on helping, and maybe the other person with time will come around. Isn't that right?
That's right.
Sometimes you just have to think of the health and well-being and safety of the person. If they know that only mom is going to react favorably and dad is not, sometimes just for their own well-being, it's best that they don't tell dad, unfortunately.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's true. Do you have, a recent, because they're getting so many people that come, is there any particular inspiring story that you can share with us with respect to something that turned out very well that maybe you didn't think was going to in the beginning? There, I remember many stories going back, several years when I first came, but is there anything that comes to mind in particular?
There's so many stories. I guess the latest one that comes to mind is our transgender friend who has very gradually come out slowly to parents, to work, and can now really be who she authentically is. And it's wonderful to see her come from being very shy and reticent. To being able to be out to her students. She's a professor. It's just an amazing story, and I see such a change over the months, over the years, but it hasn't been easy, and good to see her happy.
I'll tell you another one. Has to do with a transgender person.
And John, would you briefly give our audience a definition of what a transgender person might be, in case someone is not familiar?
Well, transgender is an umbrella term applying to a variety of conditions where the person feels that he or she is in the wrong physical package, that they were given the physical characteristics of a gender that they don't feel a part of.
Okay.
And that can run the gamut from transsexuals who actually go through the process of changing their gender identity to cross-dressers who don't go through the process but better sometimes by just putting on the clothing of the gender that they feel more comfortable with.
That they identify with, right. Okay, well, I'm sorry I interrupted. So you are about to tell us a story about that person?
Oh, we know a young transgender man. We never knew him as a female, who is now in college, but told us a story about his coming to the people in his high school when he was about to graduate. Then in high school, of course, he was identified as a girl, but he came to the principal and said, "I don't want to have a white robe to graduate. I feel that I'm a male and I want a blue robe." And he did this with great trepidation the bottom line is that it turned out beautifully. The school was very accepting and understanding. So were the students. It never made a ripple. There was no consternation on the part of anybody. It was fully accepted. His family was great, and they're very loyal PFLAG parents now.
Wow,
and
that's wonderful.
It's just a wonderful story. That kind of a story doesn't happen in every instance, of course. And PFLAG is there to kind of address the instances where it doesn't work out that well. But in his case, it was wonderful.
Yeah, he transitioned really in his senior year in high school.
Uh-huh.
So,
I see. Well, that may have, you know, been, then he was going on to college where conceivably he would have more freedom and, you know,
absolutely,
separation from parents, and maybe that was, you know, the linchpin or something. But that is a wonderful story. And, you know, now that you bring up the topic of transgendered persons, one of the very interesting facts that you shared with me was that, you know, in the early days, and admittedly I haven't been to a meeting in quite a while, but I'm there in spirit, and but in terms of numbers, you know, there may have been half a dozen people or so, and I remember the days when there was a separate room, and these half a dozen people would go off into this small room and have a separate meeting. And now there's just a huge influx, isn't there?
There really is, and I think it's energized our PFLAG meetings. I think the transgendered folks that come with their parents, we have older transgender folks come, we have parents and allies come, we have and young
and by
people.
Allies, you mean friends that are supportive,
yeah,
right? Straight
yeah,
friends,
an uncle or a friend or a family member or trying mm-hmm. to understand, and that's so we break up into.
Hello.
I'm here.
Hello. Are you there?
I think we lost our callers.
Uh-oh.
Hopefully they'll call back in.
Okay.
One of the questions that, while we're waiting for them to call back in, considering, you know, there again, this is an issue that I bring ignorance to the table. I'm not gay, and so I'm in the learning process about this issue. We see a lot nowadays about ex-gays that have the cure. Now, where does this fit in the whole issue? Are there people who go from one to the other back and forth, or is this just something that maybe the person wasn't gay in the first place? It's something I think society as a whole, and myself included, need to get a grip on and understand a little further. Do you?
Yeah, and I think you mean in terms of, oh, I'm cured, I thought I was gay, but I'm really not, and I've been, as I say, there are certain types of organizations that propose that they will help you, you know, realize that, you know, you really are not gay, or you've been saved and all of that. And it's really, to me, those are really kind of scam organizations. This is biologically based and genetically based. It is not a lifestyle. And when people talk about, oh, well, their lifestyle, it is not a choice. It is something that is at the gene level and biologically predetermined. However, you know, it may take many years to for a person to acknowledge. In my particular case, maybe I had inklings when I was about 13 years old, but I didn't truly acknowledge or come out or face the fact, Delilah, until I was in my mid-30s, and I met a woman that just, you know, holy cow, what the heck is happening here? I do not understand this. And then once I realized that and started getting information and going to meetings in another city because I didn't want people to know at first, it all made sense. It fell into place, and I said, oh, my God, you know, this is what really happens. But, you know, particularly the fundamentalist Christians are people that purport to say that, oh, you know, you can be saved, and we can, you know, we can make sure that we can cure you, and all this kind of malarkey. And to me, that's what it is, malarkey. And there are particular people who are extremists, like this one gentleman called, well, he's not a gentleman, but called Fred Phelps, which John could talk a blue streak about, that perpetually stir the waters. It's are always there to quote the Bible and out of context and try to let people know that, you know, this is the worst sin that could be. When really, all you're trying to do is to be who you are, and it's not a factor of going back and forth between one orientation to another. It could be that a person is bisexual, in that by definition they are sexually attracted to both genders, which I guess to me, intellectually, emotionally, I don't really understand it totally. I would think, in my heart of hearts, I would think when it comes down to brass tacks, it's really one that you prefer. But there are many bisexual people. Hello?
Sure.
Hello?
Oh, are you back?
We're here.
Did you take a coffee break?
I don't know what happened, but...
Okay. We thought you were taking a coffee break. That's okay.
It's on.
Is your phone okay?
Yes. No.
Okay, good. Well, Delilah was just trying to give an explanation to Delilah with respect to, you know, some of these organizations that say that we can cure you from your gayness, and, you know, trying to give them the basis of, you know, that is genetic, biologically predetermined, and that there are these extremist religious organizations that purport this. And mentioned Fred Phelps a little bit, and John, I said that you could talk a blue streak about people like him, but let's not talk about him too much because I want to talk about him. But so what would Delilah, why don't you repeat your question to him, and maybe he'll also give you his take on it.
Well, as I was telling Donna, as, you know, a straight person coming to the table in ignorance, I'm learning about the issue, and I feel like I probably represent the average Joe out there who really just does not have the information. So how can we, you know, educate people? And the question was, how do you address the so-called ex-gays? Where do you see this all fitting into the issue as a whole?
Well, every single organization that has to do with mental health has come out to say that ex-gay ministry or pray away the gay does not work. In fact, is very detrimental, and I think that's just
that's pretty much a given. It's uniform within the mental health and psychiatric and psychological professional associations that conversion therapies, reparative therapy, ex-gay ministries, there's several names to it, but they're not effective, and more importantly, they're harmful to the point where the state of California has just enacted legislation to prohibit that kind of therapy or program for people 18 or under. And Dr. Oz had a TV show on this subject very recently, I think this last week, in fact, where he had people who on both the sides of the issue, but the overwhelming, in my view, evidence coming out of that show was that these ex-gay ministries are dangerous, particularly to youngsters.
Mm-hmm. I think that communities of faith play a very big role in this whole coming out and welcoming and moving equality forward. And I think it's really good to know what your community of faith says about the issue and to step in. As we did, met with our minister and said, we have a lesbian daughter, and we want to know when we sit in the pews that we're going to hear good, positive things from the pulpit. And so our church went through the open and affirming process, and that was really wonderful for us. And I think more and more churches have welcoming programs, and that you can find all that information if you just go to pflag.org. They have a brand new publication called Be Not Afraid, Straight for Equality in Faith Communities, and you can download any of the many, many pamphlets that PFLAG National has if you go to their website. And they're very helpful. But we do see that communities of faith can be a huge, huge stumbling block, unfortunately.
And if you're looking for a church like the Universalist Society is a very welcoming community as well. If you do not have your own place of worship currently, there are many churches that are welcoming. So you can kind of shop around a bit and find right.
Yep.
Yes, we're members of the United Church of Christ, which has a program called the Open and Affirming Process, and that's the one that we went through in our church 15 years or more ago. And but other denominations have similar programs. It's increasingly the fact that faith communities are slowly but surely coming around to an understanding that they, in order to do their job well, they have to address the entire population, including the part that's gay.
There are other traditions. I mean, Buddhism has their own website for gay Buddhists. Hinduism has their own website, Baha'i, Confucianism. It's just amazing. There's an Institute for Welcoming Resources that you can go to. So there are a lot of resources, and you don't have to feel isolated, which I think is the number one drawback. Parents and families sometimes feel that they can't talk about this other family member. And with the holidays coming up, it's very often the time when GLBT family members want to be part of the family and want to be welcomed at the table. And sometimes that's not always, doesn't go as well as it ought to.
Right. So would you, I know what I would say, but would you recommend, if you have someone that is sort of getting inspired by our conversation and saying, you know, I fit this category and I'm going to come out and I'm going to announce at the, after they say pass the turkey, oh, by the way, Mom, is that necessarily the way to go?
Well, every family is so different. It would be
right.
Hard for me to say you should do it right in the middle of the cranberry sauce, but it might not be bad to prepare Mom and Dad that you're going to be there, part of the group, and this is something that you want to be recognized. Maybe it doesn't have to be an announcement. Maybe, an announcement as such. Maybe it can just be, I'd like to bring my partner or I'd like to bring my boyfriend,
right,
or my girlfriend,
yeah,
to come with me. And everybody does it at their own speed. But we do notice that around holiday time, I mean, we met the night before Thanksgiving this year, and we had 45 people. Usually people are home putting their turkey in the oven. But
right.
Many of them were concerned about how the holiday would go.
Mm-hmm.
And weddings, same thing. Any big get-together can be a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah,
and some of the challenges do have to do with bringing a significant other to the proceedings. That's a different kind of a dynamic, but much the same as a heterosexual child would create when bringing a significant other to the Christmas table.
Right, something somebody new. But as facilitators of this group for so many years, I think you have a wealth of information and advice if someone were coming in for the first time. We talk about doing things, virtually in baby steps. And like I said, we might not want to proclaim everything, and do things in small stages. So can you talk about the evolution of how, you know, you became the facilitators and what you have seen over the years in the beginning as compared to now? And, you know, it's very hard to run a nonprofit of this type as well. So, you know, can you address some of that?
Well,
take that on.
I remember so much the first meeting. I mean, people do remember their first meeting.
Right.
And I didn't even know if I wanted to say my name. I mean, I was really closeted. And we see that still today. There's some people that just can't speak even. They just need to have a little more confidence, and they gain that over time. It might not be at the first meeting, but they'll be there and they'll listen, and they know that their words will be confidential. And that was huge to me. We sat in the elementary classroom. You probably remember, Donna, chairs were little, where maybe 10 or 12 of us, and now our meetings are 40 and 50 people. It's just a matter of opening your heart, opening your sensitivities, and realizing that the health and well-being of your child is a pretty darn important thing. And don't let that just go. Don't let it slip away. And
well, you know what I think, Becky? One of our dear friends and colleagues who just passed away, Susan Murphy Milano, had this saying, and it was with regard to trying to be proactive with your situation, whether it be domestic violence or something else. And she used to say, "Get out of your own way." And I think get out of your own way, right, Delilah?
Yeah.
And that's what parents and other relatives of the gay person have to do. Don't take this on as being a very self-centered, selfish thing. Oh, my God, you know, I'll never have a wedding or any of that baloney. You can still have a wedding, you know, just a different kind of wedding. Get out of your own way, and you think of the interest, the well-being of that person. So, you know, that's what I think. But in terms of how you've seen it change over the years from 89, God, that seems like a long time ago, to here it is, almost 2013. As facilitators, and I know, you know, trials and tribulations and trying to get people to volunteer to do things, what strikes you most as being the facilitators of a group like this, and, you know, both pro and con? That's what I want to get a sense of, because there's many, many kinds of support groups. There's support groups for homicide survivors that I've been in, for people with disabilities that I've been a member of. You know, I'm a person for all seasons here, remember? So they all have support groups, but this is unique in its own way. What can you say about being the facilitators for all these years?
Well, I think there are lots of challenges, of course. Some of it is administrative, but we don't have a large enough group to really have that as a major problem. Basically, it's human power that is the issue, as it is in so many nonprofits. We need more activists. We're in Connecticut, where we are in pretty good shape right now with respect to legislation, but it hasn't come easily, and we have needed over the years a lot of folks to lobby our legislative folks, and we've gone to Washington to lobby there on occasion, and we've spoken at forums all over the place, and churches, and in the legislature itself, and in other arenas to try to bring about the changes that we've seen in our laws. The Non-Discrimination Act in schools was the first one that we addressed, and then, of course, the marriage issue has been huge. Has been in many states, but we were one of the early states to approve that.
Right.
And
all of that requires people, and we've been fortunate to have such people. Right now, we're experiencing a lot of positive reinforcement because our ranks are swelling. We used to average maybe 20 folks a meeting. Now we're getting two and three times that typically.
I think, too, you have to remember that when you finally come and you're out at PFLAG and as a parent or an ally, and you think, well, I don't need to come anymore because now I've gotten my legs under me and I'm feeling good about this. And when you don't need PFLAG, that's when PFLAG needs you, because we need you to go and talk, write letters to the editor, to the Boy Scouts. We need you to go to the local radio station and say, please don't have Dr. Laura on the air. We need you in so many ways, and we see this. So I'm saying it's fragile. PFLAG is still fragile. There were seven chapters 10 years ago. Now there are four in our state.
In Connecticut, Wow, yeah, attrition, and, you know, it's like you say, to the person power, human power, and the fact that, you know, it's very rare that someone would carry the torch as long as you have, and I'm so glad that you're still doing it, really, because, you know, I couldn't conceive of anybody else, but I know that if there were other people that step up to the plate, I know
even
yes.
when we're counting on that.
Right?
We're counting on that
right.
soon.
Yeah, you're counting on it soon because, you know, you might want to do some other things. It'll always be in your life. But, you know, that's the same with people that get invested in crime victim advocacy. You got to have other people stepping up to the plate to help. And, you know, this show talks about the aftermath of the effects of crime or tragedy, John and Becky. And when someone comes out, there's a recognition of being GBLT. It kind of it indelibly alters their life, and it creates a domino effect in their whole life in terms of friend, family, and community. And what are there particular effective strategies that you've discovered that may help to sort of quote unquote reduce the shatter for people that are in anywhere on the spectrum in terms of coming out or feeling comfortable? I think, Becky, you talked about when you feel comfortable and I don't need it is the point when you have to become that advocate for other people, right?
I focused on the theme of your show, Donna, also, Shattered Lives, and the sub-theme of real people, real tragedy, real help. I don't think having a child come out as gay shatters one's life, but it does shatter some dreams. And
okay.
I think that's what we have to make people realize, that there was a perception of what this child was before he or she came out as gay or
mm-hmm.
transgender. But that was only a perception. It wasn't reality.
Right.
And if you can get that point across early on, it's a big step in the right direction. In terms of real people, yes, we deal with real people here, and we believe we deliver real help in our process in PFLAG. But real tragedy, I don't know. Only when the gay person is so driven by non-acceptance that they're driven into depression and even
suicide,
heard so many times, then that's a tragedy. But having a gay child per se is certainly not a tragedy. And
no,
many people
it is
have voiced the idea that it's really a blessing. Many parents have come to treat it as that, and I think we have too. Our lives have changed for the better because of the experience that has been thrust upon us.
And I've always been grateful to my daughter for being brave enough to come out. Many, you know, that's a brave thing to risk the love of your parents. And I think she did a brave thing. And we, she just led us in the right direction. And she's a fabulous woman, and her partner and her spouse, legally married now, they're just fabulous people, and they've taught us so much. But you have to be willing to listen and get out of your own, as you said, or someone said, get out of your own way.
Susan. Yep. I think that's the way. And by the way, you have my permission to take any of that lexicon that applies, and you can use it in PFLAG. I'd be honored from our show bylines. I really think, you know, what you said is true. I'm wondering, are there particular goals that you have for 2013 for PFLAG right now? And how can, and the other side of that is what I always like to ask is how can we as a national audience help you to get the message out? Or what John just said, it's shattering of an incorrect dream, perhaps. What else can we do to help you?
Well, our focus has been kind of limited to Connecticut and what needs to be done here on our local scene. And as I've said, most of that has been accomplished, at least the part that can be done through our legislature and through our laws.
Right.
But in most or many areas of the rest of the country, and particularly in other countries, there is such a huge amount that needs to be done. The country of Uganda is about to sign to enact a law that would impose a death sentence for what they call aggravated homosexuality, which is more than one time.
Oh my goodness.
Think of that, putting someone to death for loving someone of his own gender.
That's just unconscionable.
That's the type of thing that just cries out for action. We can do very little sitting here and in our homes to counteract that, but there needs to be a constant groundswell of letter writing and contacts with people in power to do something about those things.
For sure. Those type of things just are outrageous. They kind of harken back to the, when we're talking about crime victim issues and the things that are like epidemic proportions, and we're dealing with human trafficking, that type of issue too, just infuriates me that people
would be.
Well,
another thing too, Donna, is the fact, you know, isn't today World AIDS Day? Yes, and how long and how many people have blamed the gay community for AIDS? I mean, it's been blatant.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And homophobia certainly did rear an ugly head in that fight, yeah.
It did, and I don't know. I mean, we can try and do our best to counteract the stereotypes. I mean, there's many misconceptions that people hold, but through listening to shows like this and becoming educated, just by even by knowing in your daily life, I'm sure if you're a straight person, there's got to be, I would say, at least three or four people that are gay that you may or may not know in your life. I mean, it's just, we're everywhere, and we're proud to be there, but it just by the fact of knowing them and experiencing who they are as people, on the one hand, we're just like everybody else. On the other hand, we have very unique qualities to give. And, I just wonder whether, you know, what the future will hold, if it's going to be continued enlightenment with, you know, social media being out there and other people being more accepting, then I think it's good for all of us. And I just wondered if you had some parting comments with respect to the issue in general. And maybe we skipped over a little bit because the phone went dead, regarding how many people are coming to the meetings now with regard to being transgendered. You said you used to have like 20 members, and now maybe you have double, triple that. How many transgender people are attending?
Well, I'd say at least half of our numbers are trans folks and allies. At least, yeah, I'd say
mm-hmm.
that. About half of our meetings
wow.
are...
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's incredible. It's incredible in a good way that, you know, they would feel comfortable to be out and be there and helping. Are you collaborating with other chapters from other states at the present?
Yes. There are four other chapters, and we are in pretty constant email contact with all of them.
In Connecticut.
In Connecticut. And we, of course, are in the national PFLAG network through email and national conferences. Becky and I have attended many national conferences of the organization over the years and always come back with our batteries charged. They're wonderful. They have wonderful speakers and programs. So yes, we're pretty much a statewide organization. I do want to say bring up one issue that continues to need some work on the national level, and that's the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA. That of course is now in the courts, but it's a very damaging piece of legislation that ought to be rescinded, but I doubt that the current Congress will do that. So I think we have to rely on the courts to do it. Some of the lower courts have declared it unconstitutional, and it's now in the hands of the Supreme Court, and it's likely that they will address the issue. But I think the recent elections helped considerably on that issue. As you know, the four states that addressed the question of same-sex marriage on the ballot all voted in favor of that, and that was the first time that it had happened on the state level. So a huge step in the right direction.
I
think the marriage issue is the most important for gay people that there is, because it puts the issue right where it ought to be, a question of two people loving each other, wanting to be committed to each other, wanting to support each other for the rest of their lives. You know, why shouldn't they be given the right to do that? It's a human right as well as a civil right.
Of course, it just makes sense.
Supreme Court comes around to see it that way.
It just makes sense. And one or so other quick questions. Those, if someone is out there and they have come out and they do not have anywhere to go or they feel it's unsafe, what would you recommend they do?
I would recommend they go to www.pflag.org, and you can check with that website to their closest PFLAG chapter.
And they will help.
And yeah, they can plug in their zip code or whatever, and it will lead them to a PFLAG chapter. And I think that would be one good beginning.
Beginning and to get them resources where they could stay somewhere where it's safe. Well, thank you so much. Our time has flown by here, and I really appreciate you coming on. The start of this holiday month in this busy time. Please do keep in touch with me. I'd love to have you back, and we'll continue the conversation, all right?
Our pleasure, Donna. You're doing good work here.
Well, thank you so much. And for everyone else, please do stay tuned next weekend. We are going to have another show on Saturday, December 8th. And remember, when it comes to crime victims, don't just try. Make it happen. So good night, everyone. Thank you, Delilah. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Peggy.